Welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
And part of the mission of the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter is to provide scholarships to service-oriented high school seniors.
And each year, between 60 to 75 deserving students are awarded scholarships to local colleges and trade schools.
And if your family or business would like to join in providing scholarships to these future leaders by sponsoring a podcast, please contact us at byupodcasts.slc@gmail.com, and we'll be in touch. And each time we do one of these interviews, I pinch myself that we get this opportunity. This week, we have the amazing privilege of having not just one, but two amazing guests who also happen to be married. Jane Clayson Johnson is a popular speaker and best-selling author of two books. Her latest book, Silent Souls Weeping, is a candid look inside the core-shaking world of clinical depression. She spent 3 years interviewing scores of Latter-day Saints and documenting their experiences in an effort to open a dialogue, a new level of honesty, authenticity, and hope for those who suffer with diseases of the mind. Jane is an award-winning broadcast journalist, widely known for her work over the last decade at NPR. Before that, Jane worked at CBS News, hosting the network morning program. She was on the air on 9/11. Jane interviewed presidents and Hollywood stars. Many remember her high-profile interview with Martha Stewart just before Martha went to prison. Jane's network career started at ABC News, where she traveled the world from Kosovo to Indonesia, covering the biggest news stories of the day. Jane is an accomplished musician. She went to BYU on a violin performance scholarship. Her husband, Mark Johnson, is co-founder of the strategic innovation consulting firm InnoSight, which he co-founded with Clayton Christensen. He advises top companies in a wide range of industries, including healthcare, aerospace, and defense. Mark is the author of several award-winning articles published in the Harvard Business Review. His most recent book is titled Lead from the Future. Mark is a graduate of the United States Naval Academy, Columbia University, and the Harvard Business School. Mark joined the church when he was 36 years old before meeting Jane. They are now parents of 5 children and 4 grandbabies, and they live just outside Boston. Jane and Mark, welcome.
Wow, that was a mouthful. Congratulations, you made it through, Dave.
You're awesome. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
We made it. Can you two just tell us about yourselves, maybe your interests and hobbies, maybe one thing each that our listeners may not already know about you?
Go ahead, honey.
All right. Well, I'll kind of give it away. I went to the Naval Academy and was an aerospace engineer and wanted to fly off carriers, but didn't have the eyesight to be in the front seat. And I didn't want to sit in the back seat. So I've been a passionate fan of aviation. So a little tidbit about me is I've got almost 1,000 hours of flying, but I don't have a pilot's license. So I have a pilot with our company. It's a small plane, and I'm an avid pilot, so maybe that's a little fun fact.
P.S. He doesn't have his pilot license because his wife won't let him get his pilot's license. Yeah, that's the postscript to that story.
As long as there's always adult supervision in the plane with me, I'm allowed.
Nice. Yeah. And now we know who your favorite apostle is, I guess.
Yes. Although he's a fighter jet in 747, Captain. I don't know what you think about a little 4-seater plane, but
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Nice. Nice. Well, Jane, my first question goes to you, Jane, is I'm just curious, you know, with the theme of this podcast being moral and ethical leadership, you know, the journalism world or the news and media world's probably changed quite a bit since you were regularly on the television. I'm just curious what thoughts come to mind when you reflect on moral and ethical leadership as it's related to journalism.
Well, it's true, actually. When I started in broadcasting back in the late 90s, that dates me. You know, I started at KSL Television in Salt Lake, and then I went to the networks, and I first went to ABC News in Los Angeles, worked on Peter Jennings' program, did a lot of international travel, and then at CBS News in New York, hosting a morning program. I mean, back in those days, the sky was the limit. I mean, they would send you on stories and they would actually expect you to get the story. It wasn't about the headline. It wasn't about, you know, sort of a surface, superficial coverage of news. It was actually it was actually news. And, you know, so you'd stay on a story for a week or two, or, I mean, I was in Macedonia and Kosovo for 3 weeks getting the story. So there has definitely been a shift. And the change, I think, is reflected in the 24-hour news cycle, which means that, you know, the headline grabs the attention. And so often there's not a lot of depth to the reporting. And, you know, that to me is a shame. And I think, you know, we're now entrenched as viewers and as news gatherers in our particular camps. So you have one style of news, you have an opposite style of news on the other end of the political spectrum. And, you know, people kind of gravitate to what they want to hear, not what news actually is. And, you know, we also have a precarious relationship with the truth these days. And so that's also troubling to me as a journalist. So I think when it comes to moral and ethical leadership, when it comes to journalism, I don't really relate to or even recognize news as it once was.
And Jane, I remember growing up, there's two things about me that I'm always so proud of. Anybody who's a member of the church, anybody who's done anything from Utah. And I just remember watching you on CBS and just being like, holy cow, I can't remember. I believe that she's a member of the church and that she's doing all this and doing so amazing. And I guess with your long career in TV, what are some of the key learnings from maybe all of the interviews that you had? Is there a highlight or two that you can share with us?
Sure. I mean, I guess there are two things that I would say. The first is, you know, my experience as a member of the church, working in journalism. And the second was just being a journalist in a pretty, busy life. And so when I was in New York, you know, I mean, I was on the air. I started my day at 3:30 in the morning, and I was on the air between 7 and 9, and I was interviewing, you know, the president 1 minute and Martha Stewart the next and the latest author or Hollywood star. And it was mind spinning. You know, it was just an extraordinary opportunity to meet lots of different kinds of people. And it was a tremendous amount of work. And there are a lot of people who work very hard, but I got to say, those were long days and long nights, and, you know, it takes a toll. And part of the reason that I left New York was because I wanted to have a family, which is why I moved to Boston to marry Mark after being in television for, you know, a number of years at a very high level. I knew I wasn't going to be able to get back on that train when I stepped off, and I did it intentionally and for a reason. That's a hard choice to make, and I would do it again. But, you know, it certainly came at a cost for me professionally, but I gained an awful lot in other areas. So that's what I'd say about that. And then I think, you know, being a member of the church in journalism was certainly not at KSL, of course, but at ABC News in Los Angeles and at CBS News in New York, you know, I was always surrounded by people who had never known a member of the church before. So they had never actually met someone from our church. And so there were a lot of old stereotypes, even in the, you know, even in 2000, you know, 5, 6, 7, a lot of people had a lot of outdated ideas about what members of the church believe. And so surprisingly to me, which indicated that we have a bit of a public relation issue, certainly in a lot of circles where we're not represented as often as we might be. So that's a long answer to say that I felt like my mission a lot of the time was to help people understand what an active member of the church, who they are and what they believe and how they behave and sort of the, you know, the leadership qualities that entails, the character qualities that entails, And, you know, I was just always in the spotlight in that way.
And I would add, speaking for Jane, on her behalf, you know, back to the point of moral and moral leadership, I think you've described a number of times, honey, the people want to test you. They want to test, are those standards real? Are you willing to compromise those standards? Are you willing to relax those standards? And I think it's interesting, you know, that Jane did herself and the church and her own, you know, moral standards. She did well to hold them, you know, to say these are things that are not negotiable. And, you know, I think that is something that was projected to people that were around her.
I remember just a little story when I was starting on anchoring the network program at CBS with Bryant Gumbel. He was my co-host, and we traveled around the country in a private plane, in a jet, and we touched down in all the major media markets, from Chicago to LA to Seattle to Miami, Philadelphia, in a week. And in every city, we'd have interviews. And I remember one interview with a reporter who was just obsessed with this idea that I did not drink coffee. And how could I possibly wake up at 3:30 in the morning and not drink coffee? And, you know, I tried to explain a little bit about, you know, the genesis of that. And I'll never forget, sort of as I finished describing, you know, my standards in that particular area, which is a small, you know, piece of my life, but he was obsessively focused on it. After I described that story, Bryant Gumbel spoke up and he said, you know, I don't drink coffee either. Because I have learned over 25 years of waking up at 3:30 in the morning that the coffee gives you high highs and it gives you low lows, and it's just really not healthy. And I remember the reporter just kind of looking dumbfounded, like, what have I gotten myself into? But it's an interesting example, you know, of people kind of stepping up for you and vouching for you and you know, sticking to your standards, because it would have been very easy for me just to kind of shrug it off and talk about something else.
Yeah. Mark, I'm curious, you know, with reflecting on your professional life and moral and ethical leadership, how has that, you know, concept surfaced in your professional life? And also, what did you learn from Clayton Christensen to be a more moral and ethical leader?
Well, let me start with your first part of the question, which is, it's an interesting reflection that I think is a little bit of the sign of the times. You know, where I'm drawn to is what's happening with corporate America, with corporations today, which is there is a movement afoot. It's been probably the last couple of years where corporate social responsibility has become a much bigger deal. I mean, the word has been around for a long time, that phrase, but companies are now wanting to recognize their importance, you know, to contribute to society and to drive, you know, the benefit of human beings from a welfare perspective, from an ethical side of things. And in fact, there's a group called the Business Roundtable, where there's very set of notable leaders, the CEO of IBM, the CEO Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan, and they're all talking about the commitment towards what corporations are going to do, not just to serve the shareholders, but to serve society. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things we can talk about what I've learned, but I think I just wanted to share with the audience that's moral leadership, moving towards, you know, capitalism actually is something that we can believe in, but where it especially takes off is when people make personal choices to give back and to help others. And I think corporations are coming to realize that just serving the shareholders is insufficient for capitalism and for societies to survive. And so I think that's a big piece of what I'm learning, is just sort of seeing that happen and seeing the need for that. As far as Clay Christensen goes, well, I mean, you know, where do I begin, right? I mean, he's just an amazing tower of a human being. who always, you know, really sort of incorporated anything that he did related to teaching about disruptive innovation, teaching about in general business theory, that he intertwined life principles within that, gospel principles even. And so I think it's in that incorporation of values, personal values, that are driving the way you teach business or to teach any discipline, that I think is what's inherent in moral leadership. And he epitomized that.
Well, and what's interesting about Clay and Mark's story is that Mark was a student of Clayton at Harvard Business School and came back after working in New York at Booz Allen to start this company with Clay, start Innosight with Clay. And it was Mark's idea to start Innosight. But in the process of starting that company, to Mark's point about interjecting, values and gospel principles, Clay said to Mark, you know, if you really want to understand how I think, you really need to understand my faith. And Mark said, well, okay. and as a non-member of our church, started taking the missionary discussions and ultimately joined the church in the process of starting Innosight. So that to me is an example of Clay's impact, certainly has impacted our family.
That's incredible. I love Clay. I actually flew out to meet him one time in Boston, and his humility and his meekness is what really struck me with someone who was deeply influential to Steve Jobs and read, you know, Netflix and on, but he is still just such a humble man, and I love his book, How Will You Measure Your Life? So that's awesome. Jane, I'm curious, speaking of books, the book that you wrote, what was your thought behind writing that? And one of the interesting principles in there talks about perfectionistic tendencies. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So the reason I wrote my book is because of my own experience with mental health struggles, specifically depression. And I realized that really within the church, especially, there just was not a dialogue, an open dialogue about these challenges. And so I wanted to put my journalism skills to use. And in the beginning, you know, when I pitched this book to Deseret Book, when I pitched Silent Souls Weeping to Deseret Book, I mean, there was kind of a silence on the other end of the line, like, well, okay, you know, and they were supportive, but I don't think they really knew, you know, what I had in mind. And so, you know, over the course of 3 years, I interviewed, you know, more than 150 people. I collected literally, you know, thousands of stories and just drew a line through what I heard in an effort to start and engage a conversation that I think was missing within the church. You know, Elder Holland's talk, of course, in conference in 2013 was a pivotal moment for many members who had never heard an apostle or really anyone in the church speak about mental health challenges. And so I wanted to sort of jump off, you know, where he kind of left off. And so that was the point of my book. And I think it is... the reaction to my book has been beyond anything that I ever could have imagined. I mean, I still, you know, to this day, I get emails and, you know, DMs on social media, you know, from people who, a lot of men, and certainly a lot of women, but, you know, I've never been able to talk about this before, or the stories in here, your story, is exactly my story. And I've never talked about it before because I've been so ashamed and I've been so embarrassed about it. And I think the perfectionism piece kind of ties into that, to your question. Mm-hmm. You know, I think in the church that the perfectionism that we all try to sort of live up to in our lives, ultimate perfection, I think creeps into sort of a daily facade of perfection, which is, you know, we can't really be authentic and real about what's going on in our lives. And so that was an important chapter in my book, Toxic Perfectionism and How That Contributes to Depression. It's a real problem. And so, kind of being open and honest about these things is a way to sort of deflate perfectionism and kind of have a different view of ourselves and the challenges that we face.
You know, what comes full circle to it is because of the perfectionism piece and putting in the, you know, place that you would be, say, a good mother or a good father, you know, in every dimension to everybody else, you can't have the discussion about you having depression in self.
Right.
Because even having depression means you're not perfect.
Exactly.
So I think that's what I think Jane has done such an incredible service to, is taking and getting this conversation out in the open and out of the shadows. You know, which is just an incredible service to people to be able to feel comfortable to start having this conversation in a much more authentic way in and of itself.
Yeah. And I definitely enjoyed that book and the time and research and effort you put into it. And especially just sharing your personal story, Jane, you know, in those really dark days and those moments that, that were unbearable as you described it. I'm just curious, you know, it's easy to sort of read those books and think, you know, I guess they sort of figured that out and I'm glad they have the book, but what I'm curious between the two of you, like what's day-to-day life look like with this mental health concern? And I mean, where are you at with it all now?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, over the last 6 months, I do a lot of Zoom firesides, stake firesides, multi-stake firesides. And I often have Mark join me at the end of those firesides, because I think it's really interesting to hear from a spouse / partner of someone who has struggled. Yeah. There's a chapter in my book for caregivers, because if you're living with or love someone who struggles with mental health challenges, it's very hard on you too. And so I think, you know, Mark is exactly the opposite of me. I mean, he's just, you know, I don't want to say non-emotional, but it just kind of is a straight line. You know, he never gets too excited. He never gets too upset. And, you know, when I had my, pretty serious bout with depression, which I detail in the very first chapter of my book, you know, fantasizing about my own funeral and, you know, kind of who's going to be the replacement wife when I go, because my husband deserves so much more than this and my kids deserve a better mother, you know, I mean, a real deep clinical depression. You know, Mark, I think, and he can speak for himself, you know, he really stepped up to the plate and was really the reason why I think I got help in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I, one thing just as part of this, just to kind of lay out a first point is, and, you know, and I think, you know, putting my management skills, everything that you learn in management doesn't work here. I think that's sort of the first thing I've needed to understand. You know, everything is the opposite. You know, down is up, up is down. You know, you try to go fix it, you make it worse, right? So, I mean, I have found, like, you want to talk about, like, a person who's all thumbs and doing something. I mean, I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And I think that's the part that makes it really hard, is you can feel really helpless. I mean, Jane's given me a lot of credit, but it's been hard to know how to be helpful. You just have this sort of feeling of being helpless, this feeling of being frustrated, the feeling of, like, you know, wanting to fix it, you know, why can't you fix it? You know, there's just a ton of different emotions that go through it. And it's also, you know, the whole thing, you know, just as a science, as a space, is really so nascent. We really, to this day, don't fully understand the mechanisms, the therapies. I mean, you know, it's all very art formed. And so it's hard and it's chronic. You know, even in the best of circumstances, you just don't say, okay, well, we'll do this for 3 weeks and we're done.
Right.
You have to work it over time.
Right.
And it's slowly but surely.
It's a way of life too, I think. You know, the I hate the word self-care, but self-care is really important. And, you know, I interviewed Mark for my book. I did all these interviews and I thought, well, the person I really need to interview is is my own husband. And so at the end of the book, I share the dialogue that we had really for the first time about what that experience was like for him. And I've found a lot of spouses find that to be very enlightening. Like, wow, yeah, I get that, you know. And so it's hard. It's a journey, you know, it's a journey.
Well, I just think it's amazing. And I'm so grateful that you wrote that and brought that to light, because we've had a lot of amazing guests on here who've also talked about similar struggles with Ann Romney and Donny Osmond. And so I do think you're right that it's something we need to be more willing to talk about in the church. And it's not, I mean, it's something that, you know, we all deal with mental, you know, emotional health throughout our life without question. And so it's something that, that we need to talk more about. I just wanted to tell you, thank you so much for being here with us. I know we're out of time. I don't know if you have any final words of wisdom to share with our listeners of maybe being kind during difficult times. We have some hard times that we've gone through recently and certainly have in front of us, but really wanted to just thank you both for being on with us.
Well, thank you. You know, since this is a podcast about leadership, I wanted to say that Mark's leadership capacity at Innosight is so moving to me. And most specifically because of the values that they have injected into the company. And those values guide their work. And I don't know if you want to tick those off quickly, but I think it's really worth ending on because when you have a set of a vision, a goal, and values that you infuse into a company, you know, whether it's a company, whether it's your family, I mean, it takes leadership. And I think, you know, I'm really proud of you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you, honey. That's very kind. I guess I would just say, you know, it's, you know, kind of just on that point. Yeah. I mean, you know, I express my gratitude to the gospel for, you know, kind of good as the go-to place to bring in those values. You know, we're an innovation strategy and innovation firm. And like on the innovation side, you know, I've always prescribed it as if you really want to be successful at innovation, by definition, innovation means, you know, doing something that's not been done before, you know, really creating change, doing something new and different. Well, the other side of something that hasn't been done before, you're trying to do something radically different, is the ability to be effective as a learner, like to be able to learn. And the other side of being able to learn well is to have humility. So, you know, from a very practical sense, you know, as we know in the gospel of the power of humility, there's a practical business application to it in the way I've just described it. And that is what indeed one of our values. We've actually stated one of our values is humility, along with collaboration and inclusion and transparency. But no, it's true. I've come to appreciate, you know, the power of stating and internalizing values and how that actually transcends into the fabric of the organization, you know, whether you're talking about strategic choices or tactical choices. And it's amazing. It's amazing how, you know, that's back to why a number of people may discount leadership. You know, I know in business schools, they'll be, oh, it's that soft stuff, leadership, get me to the finance stuff. But it's really the leadership piece is the piece that is powerful. And, you know, what you're trying to do here is rank this moral and ethical leadership in a world that so desperately needs moral, ethical, spiritual leadership, the way to be able to be strong in defining that and articulating that and motivating others to drive behind that. We need that in this every dimension of the world.
Yes, and we love your scholarship program, just as a final note. So we'll be contacting you. How can we help? It's just great. Thank you so much. And thanks for having us on today, you guys.
Oh, we are so grateful for you. I was going to echo what you said about leadership and about hearing a church leader say, we need more than just us talking about moral and ethical leadership. We need everybody talking about it because of the way that our world is going. And so thank you for both being such moral and ethical leaders and amazing people and real as well. And thank you so much for your time this week. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next month with another episode of our Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Have a great week. Bye-bye.